Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil is sponsored by the 2015 Canada's Walk of Fame Festival. See the all-Canadian lineup September 25th to October 1st, starting with the Massey Hall series featuring headliners Natalie McMaster and Donna Leahy, The Tea Party, and more. Later, head to the Horseshoe Tavern to take in the Future Legends Showcase, including rising stars like Bellwoods, Ascot Royals, The Beaches, and Rhea May. Visit the festival stage at Yonge Dundas Square for free performances, movies, great foods, and giveaways with concerts by 5440, Brett Kizell, Trevor Guthrie, Francisco Yates, Scotch Bastard, and more. For tickets and a complete festival lineup, visit canadaswalkoffame.com today.
Good evening, ladies and Guatemalans, and welcome to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil for this Tuesday, September 15th, 2015, streaming to you live high atop the Song Talk Radio Towers at CJRU, The Scope at Ryerson in Toronto, Canada. Song Talk Radio is a show with songwriters talking to other songwriters all about the craft of songwriting. They can be fresh newbies, established professionals, songwriters, and anything in between. Together, we'll share tips, we'll share techniques, and we'll share cool things found, and together, we all become a little bit better at writing songs. Tonight, I'll be your host. My name is Phil Emery, and joining me tonight, as always, is the dedicated members of the Song Talk Radio Action Team, Mr. Neil Modi.
I'm so dedicated.
He's very dedicated. And, of course, the man on the controls tonight will be Bruce Herrett.
Call me Mr. Action.
Mr. Action.
Mr. Action.
And, of course, and tonight, bravely managing our social media onslaught will be the one and only Eric Sorensen.
Hello, hey, Eric. Thanks for filling in. Right.
Say hello, Eric.
Hello, everyone.
There he is. And, of course, Janice is still off in the
In the woods.
Wild, in the woods somewhere.
Battling bears.
Yes, hopefully she's still alive. So don't
well
forget,
fed.
We always love hearing from you, the home listeners, so please send your thoughts, complaints, and corrections to feedback@songtalk.ca. You can find us on Twitter at songtalkradio or by using the hashtag songtalk. And of course, during the show, please send us your thoughts and your comments and questions, and we share them with our guest and with the audience in real time. You can find us on Facebook and YouTube at Song Talk Radio. Now, don't forget, you can always subscribe to the podcast feed via iTunes and or at Stitcher.com. And if you like the show, please rate and leave a review there. That helps the show get discovered by new songwriters. And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to find out how you can be a guest on this very show. And tonight, very exciting, our guest is a repeat guest. It is Frank Horvat. With a broken social scene-like attitude, Toronto's ambient-edged art-rock band, the Frank Horvat Band, uses a colorful canvas to create songs for a dynamic and intoxicating oral experience. Their latest album, Strange Machine, was crafted more like a playlist than an album, with 10 songs, 5 singers, and 13 musicians taking part. That is one crowded room. Thank God they're not all here.
Crowded.
But the constants are, were producer Jean-Martin, who was part of the team for Tanya Tarek's 2014 Polaris win, and songwriter and pianist Frank Horvat, who we have here today in the studio, back with us for the second time, this time to talk about the craft of songwriting with his brand of protest songs. Thank you for coming on, Frank.
Yay. Wow, thank you.
Very exciting.
The look on your face while he was reading that, I'm like, who were you thinking before?
Yeah.
Who wrote this?
It's an oral experience.
I don't know what you guys think.
Intoxicating?
I just don't like hearing about my own self. I'm sorry. It's weird.
Frank is some guy who wandered into the studio.
Yeah.
We're going to talk to him today.
Yeah.
So we have a bit of follow-up from the past shows and a couple of questions. One is on episode 88, the Tyler and Bryn. Is by Twitter, about calling the harmonica a harp.
Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. The term is also partly inspired by the Aeolian harp, a stringed instrument that is left outdoors to be played by the wind from Aeolus, the wind god.
Cool. Well, I study that during romantic poetry, actually. Yeah.
And, we should know that.
And you didn't say that.
You didn't say
I was holding back. I don't want to always seem the smartest in the room.
And, of course, from Steve... Steve S. No, you didn't leave a website or any contact information, so I don't know if you want us to send to share that. But next time when you're writing in, let us know if you want us to push your website, and we will. This one is a tip. I have this tendency to get stuck in a rut playing the same licks and rhymes over and over until they're all I can play. that he's a guitarist. Lately, I've joined a few communities, such as WikiLoops, which sounds cool. I guess we'll put a link in the show notes for that, where I can download drum tracks others have put down. I find trying to play to someone else's material forces me to stretch my legs a bit. In the first week, I came up with 4 or 5 little gems that I've been working on refining. Just food for thought. That's a really great way of getting some more ideas, because I know it's so easy to get stale.
It always helps to get out of your own head.
Yeah.
Whether
it's collaborating or...
And drums are the basis of all good music, right, Neil?
Absolutely.
That's true.
Neil's a drummer.
Of course, how do you know when a drummer is knocking on your door? He's speeding up. Anyways, now we have a question from Ian K, and the subject is help. Everything I write has already been written. Every time I come up with a cool riff song, a few days later I think to myself, wait a minute, that sounds eerily familiar. Oh crap, I just wrote Hello Operator. Did you guess the Jim Croce song? Operator. Does anyone else have this problem, and or do you know of a solution?
Stop copying people, for God's sake.
Don't get famous and you won't get sued. That's what I say.
Yeah. There you go.
Because seriously, no one cares. No one will care unless you make $1 million off that song. So if you're having fun and enjoying what you're doing, then great. But if you want to hit it big, so to speak, and make money, then...
Be careful.
Then, yeah, be careful and try to do something different. Try to be the next Radiohead or... you know, Bjork or something. So somebody will listen to your stuff and say, you know what? I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I was working on a song over the weekend, and the first two lines, I literally ripped them off of a very popular TV show theme. And the first two lines of lyric. And
can you say which one?
Yeah, the Family Ties thing. We've been together for 1 million years.
You have to do that now.
Yeah, and I wrote the but the joke is, by the end of the first verse, the sentiment kind of changes.
Yeah. Oh. But the end of that song is really good when they go, sha-la-la-la.
Yeah, I did the sha-la-la.
Neil, line 2 for you. It's the lawyers from Family Ties.
Oh, okay, great.
NBC's coming. Alex P. Keaton is coming to get you.
And Bruce, how do you handle that?
Oh, well, it hasn't really happened that often. I've started, like, one song I wrote, I wanted to write a Leonard Cohen song, so I just borrowed the chords. Not the chord progression, even, but the style. And no, it hasn't really happened that somebody pointed out that sounds just like. So maybe I'm lucky or I'm original.
Well, I'm going to disagree with our guest here, because I think you actually should keep on going with it. Because, initially, like, everything has been probably already been written. Because there's so many people writing music at the same time.
But it's always a different combination. Like Bruce said, you start where Bruce was and want to write a Leonard Cohen song. It doesn't mean you're going to rip off a Leonard Cohen song. Yeah. You're just going to be inspired by his approach.
Right.
And you're still going to come up with your own thing.
And what I would do is I would actually continue on working on the song, because there's a good chance you can come back and sort of tweak that little line that's the same as somebody else's song.
Yeah.
You know, you don't actually have to worry about, this song sounds like someone else.
Yeah, I think you just have to figure out where you can put your own stamp on it.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So.
And you can also quote people. I mean, I've often heard songs people have played, and I'm going, okay, well, that's a line from, the Beatles. You know?
Right.
And that's a line from, Radiohead, or that's a specific line. And I think you can quote another composer.
Yeah, and then that's what I'm getting at with the song I was working on. I think it's so blatant that it has to be like, I borrowed it and I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
So that's why.
Some people, even if you're I was listening to CBC the other night, and they had on Q, and they had a fairly famous, I won't say the name, fairly famous artist, and he said he was inspired by Leonard Cohen. But I listened to the song and I went, oh, you actually borrowed a Leonard Cohen song there, and you're not even aware of it. Mm-hmm. Like the chord progression. Well. The style of the melody, the pacing of the notes and everything. So it's fine. I mean, if Leonard calls, I guess you deal with it.
Well, I was...
Yeah, or just pay him.
I actually played bass for a band, and the guy gave me a bunch of his songs, and they're all original. They're pretty good. At a later point, I was doing another session for a band that was doing all these Rolling Stones covers.
Right.
And I'm not a huge Rolling Stones fan. I like them, but I don't know their old back catalog. And I realized that every song this guy did... from previous was actually basically a copy from one of the Rolling Stones back catalog.
Yeah.
But he was doing really well. So, there you go. Because not everyone knows, the B-sides of every Rolling Stones single. So there you go. So now how are you dealing with your ideas? You have pretty complicated songs.
Yeah, you know, I do different things in music. So what we're talking about tonight is sort of my own pet project. And speaking of not making a million, we're not going to make a million off what I do. Because, you know, structurally, I'm doing a lot of different things that you just don't do if you want to have a hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, this stuff ain't going to be on the radio.
So, and you know, and I've been sort of, I do a, in other walks of my musical life, I do, you know, a lot of film and TV pitches, and I work with other singer-songwriters who are trying to do that type of thing. So it's funny how your perspective of what you should do artistically is different. So, for example, some of the stuff we're going to listen to tonight, the hook is Not Till Way Later. And the golden rule, if you want to have a hit, is that the 60 seconds. Oh, yeah. Even less. In our day and age of, like, short attention spans. Yeah. You know what I mean? If you don't give the hook or the thing to hook them in within 30 seconds, they're turning the station.
Well, I remember back in the day, like in the 90s, I think it was a Sony Discman,
right,
like a portable CD player, and it had a little function on it where you said, like, it said sort of skip, or I forget what the function was called, but basically it would skip to the 1 minute mark of the song.
Right.
Exactly 60 seconds, in the hope that it would capture the chorus at that exact moment.
Oh, yeah, and I'm sure,
of, time,
of course it was.
It would.
Well, I remember seeing an A&R guy going through CDs, you know, that when people sent them, and he would actually sit there with, and he would be going through, like, you know, 20 CDs a day, and he'd put it on, and he'd listen to, like, you know, basically 10, 15 seconds, forward to the next track, forward to the next track, forward to the next track, and that would be it.
Right.
Because he has so many that he can't, you know, he can't sort of sit there and go, gee, I wonder if this song is going to, you know, grow on me. Because one thing I've noticed with your tunes, Frank, is that really repeated listenings really do help.
Oh, thanks.
Because, like, all the stuff was new. Like, I've heard your stuff from before.
Yeah.
But these tracks were new, and I've listened to them three times.
Yeah.
And there's a lot, because the songs are pretty complicated.
Right.
There's lots of stuff that kind of comes through on the second and third listening.
I'm still trying to figure out the time signature.
Yes. Now, you're using some pretty wacky time signatures.
So, you know, I think, I don't want to say that I do that kind of thing because of my background, but I am... Basically, I'm a classically trained composer, and so I tend to, other than writing songs and writing pop music or writing songs for my band to do or film and TV stuff, I write a lot of contemporary classical music, stuff that, you know, you go to an art gallery or concert hall to see, and there'll be 10 people in the audience in turtlenecks and come up to you and say, fascinating, wow, riveting, you know what I mean?
So intoxicating.
And I'm being sarcastic or sort of facetious about it, but actually I enjoy that part of the world. I really like a different venues where I'm able to flex my muscle. Yet, when I get some of my stuff played in that venue, they say, oh, you listen to a lot of pop music, don't you? And then when I come here, when I come to a place like this, or more of a pop milieu, pop measured, they say, wow, you did a lot of classical stuff, didn't you? You know what I mean? So you see how your different musical things tend to just go into each other. And I'm not saying that that's a bad thing. Well, it's a bad thing to make a living, but it's awesome artistically, you know what I mean? Because a lot of the people I admire in our musical world and our pop culture, like Frank Zappa, for example. You know, Frank Zappa for me is a 20th century musical genius because he conquered both the art music world and the pop music world. He conquered and destroyed them. You know what I mean? And he shook them up, and it's like, he's my idol, you know? You know, that kind of guy. Or even going further back, Gershwin. You know, look at George Gershwin. He was a serious classical trained composer, yet he could go to Tin Pan Alley and churn out song after song with his brother, there was no tomorrow. On, you know? And he was super rich from it, yet he was actually a seriously awesome trained composer. So I'm thinking, why can't we have that in our musical world? And so I sort of feel like I'm a bit on that quest musically, but I'm also just being who I am because I genuinely love these two worlds we live in musically.
Speaking of who you are, can we hear one of your songs?
Yeah, sure.
So what song are we going to start off with?
Okay, so we're going to start off
Human with... Human Cyborg.
Human Cyborg.
So let's talk about this one. Sort of an interesting song. This is, because this is an interesting time signature, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you
I
know
think
what?
It changes.
I have to hear it. I have to hear it, but I think the part of it is in 7 or something like that.
I think part of it was in 6, but then it changed again.
Oh, okay. I can't remember now.
Maybe that was a different song.
Okay, let's maybe we'll listen to it. I'm going to look on my computer because I can't analyze my own stuff here.
Okay.
Here we go, Human Cyborg.
5, Y, 6, U, 7, I, 8, O.
Life, where have you brought me?
0, A, S, D.
Life,
G,
where have you brought me?
H, J, K, L.
And that was, woo, yeah. That was Human Cyborg by the Frank Horvat Band. What a neat tune. It's interesting because it's unusual with the time, the approach, but it's actually kind of a very standard structured song. It's intro, yeah. Verse, chorus, bridge, verse, chorus.
Yes. And actually, chorus. I found this time I was listening to it, I was deliberately trying not to focus on what time signature is that,
right.
And just enjoy the song. And it's much more enjoyable that way instead of me trying to dissect the thing.
Okay, well, so just so the geeks in the house, you know, the musical geeks listening here, the verse was in 7. Okay.
Now you say, what, 7-4?
7-4.
Yeah. Okay.
The transition from the verse into the chorus was in 5-4, where the bass goes, boom, doom, 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 doom. That's 5.
That's 5.
And then the welcome to my, that's in 4. Except it's very syncopated.
It's very syncopated.
So it feels like it's not in 4, but it is in 4.
Oh, it's like the melody is a half step off from the
exactly.
From the bass
the melody is always just shifting over. Yeah, yeah. So that's a minimalist composer trick. So Philip Glass does that tons of times, nothing stays on the beat. Like, the band will stay on the beat, but the singers are always, like, taking one beat away and then shifting. So, but the time signature won't change. It just sounds like it is.
Oh, that is really...
But it's not even a full half beat. It's somewhere in between, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because if it was a full half beat, it would almost like almost sound like a polka or a reggae or something, right?
It would, yeah.
But you're sort of in that funny in between zone where it's not on downbeat, it's not quite on the next
but
beat.
But it's not free though. It's not structured.
Very much so.
So 7-4 would be 1, 2, 3, 1. How do you count 7-4?
So it would be 1. Let me see here. Let me refresh my memory. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And the thing that makes it unusual too is that there are popular songs that are in 7-4. Salisbury Hill by Peter Gabriel.
I thought it was in like 13 or something.
No, it's in seven.
Yeah.
It's in seven, but his emphasis is very, you know, it's like a 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. You know, it's almost like the sevens divided into a 3-4 and a 4-4.
Yeah.
Whereas what you've done is quite literally what you've described. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. There's no sort of downbeat emphasis anywhere.
Yeah, you're not subdividing the beat in 2 + 2 + 3 or like 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3 or 1, 2 or that kind of thing.
Exactly.
It's none of that.
It's all just a continuous ribbon.
Is that like a cyborg type sound you're going for there?
You mean the use of that time signature?
Yeah, because it's weird, right?
You
it's
know what? Weird. Believe it or not, I actually tried, because of what Neil just said, of not doing emphasizing the subdivisions within the bar, mm-hmm. actually I was trying to de-emphasize it. I just like the flow of the melody, like mm-hmm. the riff. The guitar riff came first, okay. and the riff came and it was like, oh, well, it sounds better if that guitar just holds, you know, just a little bit longer. So then mm-hmm. when I started writing the verse, it was just like, okay, well, just stick with it so there's some continuity between the guitar riff to start and then mm-hmm. the voice after.
So the guitar riff was really originally written in 4?
No, it was written in 7. It was sort of like free, you know, feeling, and I knew what my beat was, but mm-hmm. I had the guitar riff in my head, and it was just like, well, I don't want to cut it off to jam all those notes into the phrase, into 4, so I said, why don't I just extend it? And then from there, that inspired the vocal line, and the vocal, you can see, is those soaring lines with the good you know, it's similar to the guitar riff that started in that respect.
Now, did you write this on guitar, or...?
No, I don't play guitar, I'm a pianist.
All right, so you basically totally scored this.
I scored. All your stuff is I score everything, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So you use the dots and the flags, I guess.
Yeah.
All those things with the lines.
Yeah.
Can I talk about the bridge?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, so I'm a big fan of bridges, right? So
yes, I know that.
I like the 6-7 part. I was like, wow, that's great.
So it was like, okay, so a bridge to me is you go into a different kind of lyric content, you go into a different kind of mood, and you step away from the song so that when you come back eventually to the refrain or chorus that you get to eventually, it's like, something familiar, so it's a bit odd. And I love the fact that you have these, I assume they're random, Q1, W2.
They're not random.
No.
Okay,
they're
so
far from random.
Oh, I see.
Neil is the only one in the house who knows the pattern.
I'm the only one who's like staring at my keyboard. I was watching and listening to this.
Okay, I got the 1, 2, 3.
Hold on, what is the pattern?
I got the 1, 2, 3.
It's just reading across the keyboard.
Oh, okay.
Oh, Q1, W2, E3.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's a keyboard.
But here's the interesting thing about that, because the entire song, I mean, your introduction, you're talking about protest songs, right? So this song, to me, seems to be about the kind of, you know, the kind of technology, how it's overtaking humanity in some ways. Right?
Partly.
Well, given that that's my interpretation, the keyboard thing was kind of interesting to me because it's like somewhere in history, someone decided to lay out the typewriter keyboard like this.
It's QWERTY.
I'm not sure why they did it that way.
Yeah.
I'm sure there was a reason, but we've all just accepted it as a technological thing. That's
right.
The way it is, and you know, it's to me, it's some kind of a critique on that. It's like this thing is supposed to
maybe
make
subconsciously.
Sense.
I wasn't thinking of it that way.
Yeah.
But
you know, it's to me, it's got that kind of subversive little commentary and say like, why is the typewriter keyboard actually laid out like this?
And my favorite lyric: Would you like some trans fat with that today?
Yeah.
Would you like fries with that? Now, the only thing that jogged my mind a little bit there, Frank, or it is, it would be a suggestion. I mean, you record it and everything. Is that I would do trans fat in a way that was more easily heard.
Right.
That's all. But I think it's a wonderful line.
Yeah.
Which would you trans fat with that? Today?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, every verse is basically a scenario. The whole point of the song for me, and that's why it's called Human Cyborg, is that, you know, we live in a world where people are just machines and they're automated, and, you know, and the second one, the second verse, well, sort of, actually, believe it or not, it was inspired by, I don't know if any of you watch on Netflix some of these documentaries about life in industrial China, for example, where people live they live in these little towns that are the factory, and they're just robots, and it's like you go and today you will put in 1,000 widgets into something, and they're just like robots, and they got fed, and you know, and that type of thing. So everyone is just exploring that, and actually the whole song was completely inspired by getting a telemarketer call. I was sitting at my desk, and somebody called, and they said those exact same words. Good evening, sir. I'm calling to conduct a short survey.
Did they say there's a 900th person?
I did that. Okay. I had that because that was my little social statement.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So, but it all starts. I think good songs often start with real life and that type of thing.
Yeah, really blow that proportion. Right?
That's what I did with this.
It doesn't seem like such a stretch that would have been the 900th person he'd called.
No, I
could think of that, and I think to myself, 900? What if I had a job like that?
I did have a job like
bless those people that do, you know, and that's
hard.
And we have people and they're getting paid so little and yet our society still somehow needs this to function, and I'm like, what the hell?
You know what was creepy, Frank, is when I had that job, I was calling to check out the quality of customer service on fertilizers in the Midwest. And I'm calling these people on farms in Dakota or whatever.
How's your craft?
And I get the wife and she goes, he's dead.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm asking for the husband to talk to him to interview him. Oh, it's horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Just wanted to bring you all down a bit there. I said, well, I'm very sorry about that. Could you answer my survey? I mean, I had, you know, with full compassion. I had numbers to get, man.
You're my 900th call
today. It's a great way to start. It's a great way to start a song.
I would be interested in actually the process of writing this, because the stuff is very different, I think, than a lot of people, you know, who have their guitar and come up with verses and they sort of...
Yeah.
So you're writing this on the piano, basically?
No, I would say the last 15 years, and this is interesting, no matter what I'm composing, whether it's pop music, classical music for, you know, live violinists, EDM, you know, film, TV stuff, I write everything on Logic. Everything, whether real people are going to play it or nothing, Logic audio.
You're entering notes with a mouse?
And I'm playing stuff into Logic. I'm manipulating, I'm editing. So it's, for me, the compositional process is really no different if I'm composing a pop song versus an EDM song versus something for a string quartet.
But you're playing a keyboard. You're playing MIDI, right?
I'm playing a keyboard, but I do a lot of improv, and then I can spend days and weeks just chop, cut, chop, and manipulating and editing that way. I tend to be very frenetic. Play, like in 10 minutes, and then I'll take a week to edit and manipulate 10 minutes of items. You know what I mean?
So how are you generating the scores for the musicians, though?
Oh, I transferred into Finale.
Which is another program.
Yeah, it's a notation software. So,
because Logic does have notation, doesn't it?
It does, but it stinks. Okay. It's really not good. So when we went into the studio to record this album, you know, I would have to do all the parts for the players and that type of thing. But I had temp tracks for them often, you know, to work with. So, for the full disclosure, I do not sing. That was not me singing any of that. I do not sing. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I'm one of these people that it's my band, but it's my band because they play my music. I give them money to do it. You know what I mean? Or find money to give them to do it. But I like working with singers, like different singers. And so that one was Ghislain Aucoin. He's a singer here in Toronto. Great pop and jazz singer. And so it's really interesting. That's another aspect of doing projects like this, is like working with different people.
Cool. Okay, we're at the halfway point of the show. So for those of you just joining us, you are listening to Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. And tonight our guest is Frank Horvath.
That's okay. I've been called worse.
This is the show where songwriters talk to songwriters about the craft of songwriting. Please send us your impressions via Twitter at Song Talk Radio or with the hashtag SongTalk. Email feedback@songtalk.ca. Facebook and YouTube, Song Talk Radio. Stop by the site at songtalk.ca. And remember to subscribe to the Song Talk Radio podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Coming up on Song Talk Radio in the coming weeks, next Tuesday, September 22nd, we have a returning guest, Christine Gades. She's a great talent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tuesday, September 29th is our back-to-school special. We're going to be discussing songwriting tools. A whole bunch of different...
Get different, your pencil case out.
Yeah, get your pencil cases out. We've got a lot of handy stuff that day. And Tuesday, October the 6th, our very own Eric Sorensen is going to be coming back on the show.
In the house.
Yes, it's your CD release party, I believe.
CD recording party?
CD recording party?
Oh, it's a little behind.
It's good to have a deadline.
CD preview party.
And, of course, if you're in the Toronto area, please join us at our next Songwriters Roundtable meetup, which is on Sunday, September 27th at 1 p.m. At the Transat Club in the Annex area of Toronto. Check out songtalk.ca/roundtable for all the details. It's free to join on meetup.com, and it's free to attend the roundtable. The beer, however, is not free.
No. But one bit of feedback I forgot to mention is we're very excited is Jules, who was an amazing young songwriter who was on our show a bunch of weeks ago.
Back in July.
One of the songs she played, which was City Lights, has placed second in the 2015 Unsigned Only Teen category.
International Songwriting
Competition.
Yes.
She's 14 years old.
She's 14 years old.
That's amazing.
Amazing writer.
And can you imagine what you were doing at 14?
Good songs, that's for sure.
Picking my notes.
I was writing stuff like Frank's writing now.
Wow.
Well, not quite, but yeah.
All right. Now, one thing about the Human Sideboard I just want to mention, to me it sounded like it could be the basis for a musical. Like,
oh,
it felt
cool.
Like it was a musical piece.
It would make a cool musical.
That's funny, because I'm writing a musical right now. Nothing related, nothing sounding like this. But I'm working on a musical right
Sideboard
now.
Sideboard musical.
So, but I do get a lot of inspiration from, a lot of different things, and for sure.
Cool. So what's now the next song we have is...
Song for the Bluebird.
Song for the Bluebird. Right. Now, do you want to set this up?
Yeah. I mean, this is a song that a lot of the songs that I did with my that I wrote for my band's two albums so far, the lyrics, a lot of them came from an old notebook that my now wife, Lisa, kept, and sort of a journal that she kept as a teenager. So she wrote a lot of angsty poetry as a teenager, and I found this notebook and I said, whenever the day would be right, I'm going to try to set this stuff to music. And it ended up that a lot of this stuff went on the album. So the lyrics you're going to be hearing in this song, Song for the Bluebird, were written by about 14, 15 at that point.
Mm, wow.
And I found so much of her lyrics so poignant.
Did you take them verbatim? Or?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I edited, I would just, remove, because a lot of poetry is too long-winded for songs.
Yeah.
So I just, chopped it out and stuff.
But the essence of it is there.
It's all there. I didn't change hardly anything,
So, okay, Song for the Bluebird by the Frank Horvat Band. Really neat.
Cool.
That was Song for the Bluebird by the Frank Horvat Band. Music by Frank Horvat. Lyrics by Lisa Horvat many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So, Neil, what do you think?
This one was quite a bit different than the first one in a lot of ways.
Right.
You still got that really fascinating way of the melody being very kind of disjointed from the rest of the music in some ways. Right, where the again the downbeats are a little bit confusing,
right?
Right, because the you know like the, especially when you're repeating the verse, you sing through the first verse, or the singer sings through the first verse, and then it repeats, but the location of things shifts,
right,
the second time around, where you know then the phrase is actually broken in the middle, and the downbeat happens at the you know in the middle of the phrase instead of the beginning of the
right.
next phrase, and
yeah.
it's kind of interesting, kind of interplay like that. Yeah.
What was the now? We're going to be talking about time signatures because it's really interesting because it's not 4/4.
Sure.
Yeah, 4/4.
So this one is in 4/4.
Wow. It's in 4/4.
Right, but again, because of that, because of where you put the emphasis.
Yeah, it's in 4/4. Sorry.
It's in 4/4, but if you don't put the emphasis on the down
one
yeah. all the time, it's not going to feel like 4/4.
Right. That's amazing. Yeah, because especially the chorus feels. Like
Hang on. The verse was 4/4. No, the chorus was 5/4.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Phil, you are not losing your mind. There you go.
The Song Tong Action Team. The Song Tong Action Team.
Good year.
Yeah. But the one thing you have to say is your titles are always right on. You always know what they are, definitely.
Thanks.
The Song from Bluebird, which is. But it's interesting because you're dealing with more complicated music, it's a very different experience. Listening to it again, because every time you listen to it more, it actually becomes not normalized, but sort of familiar.
Right.
So yeah. it's a really interesting experience, you know, listening to music that's not.
It's not catchy.
It is catchy because I mean that is
well,
the chorus.
By catchy, I mean something is catchy when the first time you hear it, it embeds in your brain and you remember for the next.
Yeah.
Few hours or day or the next day you're singing it.
Wow, that's probably the ultimate compliment right there. Thank you. Yeah.
But what do you think, Bruce?
Well, I really, really liked it. I mean, I love dramatic changes in songs in terms of you had some amazing tension happening with the hand claps and the offbeat stuff happening in the verse.
Right.
And then when it was like, I don't know, this is probably not a great analogy, but when you move to the chorus, it was like Excedrin headache number 6 stopped.
Yeah.
Like there was a kind of like a beating, like a tension is all I could say.
Right.
Like, and then it would sing a little song for that. It was a relief.
Right.
Yeah, that was
tension
it.
Tension and release.
Tension.
Yeah.
Real release, well, which makes sense when you're.
Yeah. I mean, we go back hundreds of years. Bach taught us about the importance of tension and release.
Yeah.
And I mean, it is the basis of everything we do, really.
Yeah, but I'm saying you did a really good job.
Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's anybody can say that it's important, but to do it well, and then it's perfectly applicable to the lyric because the lyric now is stretched. And I love the way you took the last few words of each phrase, very legato. And very stretched.
Right.
You know, one's two, yeah, there, and the beat's carrying on, but it's stretched out, right? So 5/4, I guess.
Well, which is a tough thing to do well, I think.
What was the B section there? Please, sir, don't squeeze them so there. Was that really the B section there?
Yes,
the bridge?
It is. Yeah.
And you repeated it like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah. So, I mean, for the verses, what I did was I took one stanza of poetry, and I sort of knew in my head how long I wanted the verse to be musically, how many bars.
Okay.
And when I had the poetry, and I was like, oh, I don't have enough words to fill the rest of this thing in the grand structure of the, you know, the time allotment, the time and space I'm trying to fill for verse versus chorus. When I didn't have enough words left in that stanza to be on that theme, I said, well, why don't I just start looping it and just keep saying it? But often what I found in doing that process is often I would purposely stop one of the phrases within the stanza right in the middle of
yeah,
and then it almost changed. It almost changed meanings.
So
even though you don't hear, you know, you're hearing the same thing over and over again because you hear the pause at the end of the phrase at different spots.
Yeah.
It almost started to do different things. So I thought that was a good motivic unity thing. But it almost like even though you're hearing the same words repeated, it created a different feel.
If you had structured this music,
right.
and your lyric didn't fit, or the lyric didn't occupy the entire space of the music, and had you decided to loop it, and you found done that you just repeated the verse twice, and it was just that. It was just repeating the verse twice.
Right.
Would you then have gone back and said, maybe I just need to cut the music instead?
No, I didn't. Well, actually, this song is actually, the original version of the song was much longer. There was a third verse and everything. So I cut it for the album and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But not what you're asking, Neil, is no, not within it. Because once I figured out that that effect
I'm saying, just say you didn't figure that effect out. What I'm getting at is, would you ever
then
give...
Of course I would have.
Yeah,
if I didn't figure out that effect. But through experimentation, like your question earlier tonight about, you know, how do you come up with new ideas?
Yeah.
Well, this is part of what we're talking about here is experimentation. So you get these ideas.
We just got a tweet in from Sharon. Lovely earworm. Energetic but relaxing. Not sure why.
Oh, nice.
Energetic
Thank
but
you.
Relaxing. That's
Thank
nice.
You very much.
Yeah. Oh, and also got a tweet from Lisa Horvat. Wasn't thinking I'd marry a musician back then.
Lucky you.
She likes the music. And by the way, just because you were commenting on the singing, again, because I don't sing, I have to give full props to the lead singer, Felicity Williams. Felicity is an amazing singer here in Toronto, again, in the sort of the jazz and pop thing. And you're Beautiful talking about voice. Different ideas. That's another thing that I try to do a lot of for this album. Like, I worked with almost 15 musicians on this, people from different walks of life, and they all bring their own unique things. So Felicity, which you were mentioning, Bruce, about melody, well, in the recording process, it's like she's like an angel when she holds those long notes.
Yeah,
so as soon as she starts doing that, well, that inspires you. Well, that I'm going to write for that. And she had sung a lot of the songs on my first album, so when you're working on something like this, you know what you're going to do.
I think the first time you're on the show, you brought in a song.
It was her.
Three chord thing or something?
Yeah, that was her. Yeah.
Okay, we got one more song to go through as time is flying by. This one is called Ultimate Killing Machine. And,
cool title.
What is the time signature on this one, Frank?
I'll have to check again because I'm not good at this. I don't have this stuff memorized here.
18.5.
Okay. Here we go. Ultimate Killing Machine from the album Strange Machine, Frank Horvat.
Picture yourself in this ultimate driving machine. Desire stares with your tops being down. Driving this car is not just a driving escalator, it's a living experience and a killing experience. You're a hard-working man, supporting a wife and kids, always getting to work on time. Too bad those kids will be breathless outside when they're your age. Picture yourself in this ultimate killing machine. Killing machine. Killing machine, killing machine, killing. Kids, you don't
All right, that was Ultimate Killing Machine by the Frank Horvath Band off the album Strange Machine.
Well, that was a catchy chorus.
Yes.
Comparably.
Yeah. No, that wasn't 4-4, right?
Yeah.
The chorus
yeah.
was
yeah.
totally
4-4. Yeah, 4-4. Other than the break before the chorus, which was an empty bar of two, just for
So it was a bar of two beats?
Yeah. Just
oh,
an empty,
cool.
empty two-bar of beats before just, you...
Because four would have been way too long.
That was really...
It would have been, yeah.
What a very catchy chorus. Though.
You're always full of surprises. That's
oh,
what
yes.
just like everything...
I'm a man of surprises.
It's so, no, it's wonderfully fresh because at every turn, what I expected doesn't come. Like, I think it's going to stay in a very, you know... major key, it goes minor. If I think it's going to go minor, it goes major. If I think it's going to speed up, it slows down. Like, and it's so engaging.
That's
awesome.
Was that the first couple of verses?
Yeah.
You had this kind of
Man.
EDM kind of pad thing
yeah.
going in the back.
Yeah.
And I thought this was going to turn into like some slam and dance music. And then
yeah, I thought it was a club mix.
Yeah, it was like, it sounded like almost like a club mix thing.
And
right?
then I did disco.
And then you didn't.
And then I did the strings and the disco and R&B.
And the electric guitar and everything.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, no, it's certainly... your stuff is always... Interesting. Now, and the verses, were they, what was the time signature on that? Was it?
It's all 4-4.
It is 4-4.
Yeah, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That two off kilter as well.
Yeah, just where you put the beats, I guess, in the melody.
Yeah. And an interesting approach to lyrics. I mean, they're not, they certainly don't scan the way I think normal pop lyrics do.
Yeah, and I wrote those lyrics, and probably the reason why is because I don't know how to write lyrics. I'll be honest, I don't write lyrics too much, and so I felt compelled and I felt inspired, so this was all just like blurty things out and stuff like that, so maybe that's a good thing or it's a bad thing. I mean, I think
it fits the song.
Yeah, I think so, you know, and I'm okay, I'm happy
it
with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It totally works.
But
well,
I don't
yeah.
feel comfortable churning it out like the music side of it,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I'm sort of weird
and
that
that's
way.
That's why your chorus is a little bit more poppy because for that reason, in addition,
yeah.
that the they're just little lyric snippets.
Sure,
yeah. they're not long. Sort of like your verses are almost full sentences.
Right,
you know, which is not normally how you would write. Or conventionally how you would write lyrics in a pop song.
Well, and I knew that I wanted to I knew that I wanted a lot of the songs in this album to have sort of this protest type of element. So this one was the most blatant of them,
yeah,
to
cover
you know the anti-car and the environmental yeah. thing, and that's a really important thing in my life. And so I wanted to have that song, but I didn't want to write the traditional, you know, Joan Baez, you know, we're tearing down the rainforest and, you know, make it a folky thing.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole artistic slant here is I wanted to try to emulate music you'd normally hear in a car commercial to go against
oh,
a car
right.
commercial.
Oh.
You know what I mean? So I do a lot of film and TV stuff and a lot of film and TV pitches. So I'm used to hearing sort of the standard type of thing.
Right.
So a lot of the inspiration behind the musical context was to try to create this amazing, you know, mysterious atmosphere about this ultimate driving machine. Sorry, BMW. Hope they'll never be a sponsor of yours. Not it won't be.
Not anymore.
So, you know, so that was the whole point of creating, like, you know, how, like, when you see a car commercial, they make it larger than life. And that's
yeah,
why
yeah.
I made Tom Gill is the lead singer on that and did a fabulous job just making this breathy, earthy
yeah.
thing. Like,
yeah.
you know, you're going into another world. Instead, no, you're killing people with your ultimate driving machine. You know what I mean?
And that still was sexy.
Exactly. Oh, he's awesome yeah, yeah. at that. And but the whole paradox of that was sort of the,
right.
Not just the words, but the musical connection to that. It's sort of like, no,
it's kind of dreamy, right? Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah. Well, yeah. It's, you know, the chorus is so strong. Did it start off with a chorus? Or
I don't think so, no. I tend to write... I'm one of these people... I like to write chronologically. I like to
oh,
go
really?
In order.
Okay.
In fact, I wrote this whole album in order. I wrote
oh,
it. Like I wrote... I started with the first track and I wrote
really?
To the nine because I wanted there to be... I wanted them to contrast and I wanted the contrast.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I wrote it sort of like a classical composer would write a symphony in the
right.
four
right,
movements.
Right,
and,
right, right.
And there has to be a connection somehow. They lead to each other. So the album's sort of concept-y in that way.
Well, it sounds like that would be a...
Cool. No one
quite
does
quite
that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and I think that's why it'll never sell a million copies because nobody writes concept albums anymore, you know, because every song... Every track in the album has to sound the same as each other. You know
well,
what I mean?
Well, because there's no albums anymore.
Well, that's true.
You know,
yeah, that's right.
Some bands are still doing it.
Right.
Very, very, very few.
Right.
But, I mean,
yeah.
there's people... I do have a couple of friends who are actually back into vinyl.
Yeah.
But, yeah, everything now is a single because, you know, we have stuff on Spotify and...
iTunes. And,
you know, everything's a 40... It's a 45 RPM world, I think. But yeah. This new album, The Strange Machines, coming out soon?
Oh, no, it's out. It's been out for a year.
Okay.
It's still a new album.
It's still new.
It sounds fresh.
Yeah. And how do people get a hold of that?
Oh, you go to frankhorvat.com, and there's all the ways you can get it there. iTunes, CD Baby, you know. There's YouTube videos. If you like, so many people listen to YouTube, you know, that's how they're getting all their music
YouTube
now.
A whole music service.
Oh, they do. Yeah. So we made lyric videos because we know people will just create playlists of things they listen to on their phone and stuff directly from there. So, so it's the new way.
So it's frankhorvat.com.
Yes, that's right.
Right.
Yeah.
And, how about if they want to, follow you on Twitter?
At Frank Horvat.
At Frank Horvat?
Yeah.
With one T. Right?
Yes, one T. No H at the end.
Frank, when you write these songs and you complete them, do you go to anybody for feedback?
Well, you know, because I wrote this, this was a recording project, right? So I wrote, and then I went to my right-hand man, Jean Martin, who we co-produced it together, and he played a lot of the percussion, and, you know, he produced and engineered, and we worked really collaboratively with each other, and then we bring in the artists, and then when the artists come in, they put their little stamp on it.
When you go to him, are there any revisions to the song itself?
Sometimes. Yeah, especially in structure, or actually not so much in structure, like that song for the Bluebird we cut down massively, we snippeted it out, because we're sort of sensitive to, you know, time and space, and as a dragging on too long, but Jean's really good. Every producer's different in how they work with an artist or a writer. Some are really like about, you know, got to redo these lyrics and that kind of thing, or, you know, we've really got to redo your whole melody here or your instrumentation. Jean's great because we're really on the same wavelength that way, you know, and he's more about like orchestration and mix.
Right.
So like a lot of people think, oh, you produce an album and then you go to somebody else and do a mix. Well, you know, for a lot of the things we were doing, we were mixing as we go along because the ideas were actually generated from doing the mix at the same time. And I do that even on my little computer here when I'm doing film and TV stuff. I hardly spend any time at the end of the composition doing the mix because I was doing it while I was composing, and it really inspires the ideas as you go along. So.
Right, so they're more kind of a piece.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Very cool.
So now, do you ever perform live?
This band is really hard to perform live because because I have to pay them, and I'm a professional musician, and I treat people that I work with respect. So I don't ask people, hey, come and play for free, or I'll buy you a beer or stuff like that, because a lot of this requires practice. So we don't,
beer?
We don't gig very often, and we have to practice because a lot of this is complicated, and I've got so many other things I'm doing musically. So I love performing live, and that's the only pity in working on the Frank Horvat Band project that I really regret, is that I don't really get to do it. So you never know, though. Maybe somebody's going to hear this show and hire us or something. Yeah, you know, you never know. That would be awesome.
For the Canada's Walk of Fame.
Oh, yeah.
So if you want to hear more of Frank's stuff, you can go to frankhorvat.com, and everything is there. And on Twitter again, it's...
At Frank Horvat.
At Frank Horvat. Because I think that's about all the time we have tonight on Song Talk Radio with Bruce, Neil, and Phil. We'd like to thank our guest... coming back again, Frank. We're back.
Yay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Frank. I hope you'll come back again.
I don't know what I'll bring the third time, well, so make it a while. To give me some time.
And we'd like to thank the Scope at Ryerson. We'd like to thank Eric Sorensen for stepping in and doing our social media.
Thank you, Eric.
Eric. And, of course, Eric will be on our show in a couple of weeks. Don't miss that. And, of course, we're going to send out a hello to Janice Ho. She's still okay. And don't forget to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes and via Stitcher, and leave a rating and a review there to help others find the show. And please let us know what you think at feedback@songtalk.ca, or send us a question on Twitter @songtalkradio, or using the hashtag songtalk on Facebook and at YouTube @songtalkradio. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow Neil @MondoArt. You can follow me @FocusCreative. You can follow Janice Ho @Janice Ho Tweets. You can follow Eric @Generic
with a 3, G3N Eric.
G3N Eric. And Bruce?
Don't follow me. You make me nervous. Stop it.
Stop following Bruce.
Okay.
And please stop by the website at songtalk.ca to browse past shows and find out how you can be a guest for the show. And so from me, Neil, Bruce, Eric, Frank, and even Frank's friend who's in the show tonight.
Hey, Salt Lake City. Hey.
And we'll see you the same bat time, same bat channel next week. Good night, everybody.
Night.
Good night.
Song Talk is sponsored by the 2015 Canada's Walk of Fame Festival. See all the Canadian lineup September 25th to October 1st, starting with the Massey Hall series featuring headliners Natalie McMaster and Donald Leahy, The Tea Party, and War. Later, head to the Horseshoe Tavern to take in the Future Legends Showcase, including rising stars like Bellwoods, Ascot Royals, The Beaches, and Rhea May. Visit the festival stage at Yonge Dundas Square for free performances, movies, great food, and giveaways with concerts by 5440, Brett Kissel, Trevor Guthrie, Francesco Yates, Scratch Bastard, and more. For tickets and a complete festival lineup, visit canadaswalkoffame.com today.